With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to podcast number 4, the AI Horror Podcast. It's me, Mal, and
Maurizio.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
Good.
Ready to jump into this?
Yeah. So we're following on from the last podcast. So the last one was looking at Fright Fest as the festival itself, the movies, what we're doing, what we're up to. And we managed to cover in the one-hour podcast Thursday and Friday. We're going to attempt to try and do the next 3 days in the 1 hour we got ahead of us. So wish us luck. We'll jump straight in if you want, mate. This was the one where we split, didn't we, as well? First thing Saturday. So, again.
What did you see?
So, I saw Third Night on the Discovery screen.
Third.
And you saw The Bar, didn't you?
I remember the plot to Third Night. That's the Australian one,
creepy,
wasn't it?
Aussie horror. That's it.
Yeah. You move into a house, and then you find out on the third night, people die.
Something.
So, that sounded good. I liked it. I read through it. I thought, But then I found out my friend. On the main screen, they showed The Bar. Now, reading through this one, and I remember you saying to me that the plot just seemed rubbish.
It did.
Look at the poster. It is what it says. And you were like, that looks rubbish. And true, it is a poster about people stuck in a bar. Premise of the film is an incident happens outside the bar and all of a sudden they're stuck in the bar and you're thinking, where can they go with this? And it's true, Mal, there's a lot of first-time films that, you know, are quite out there. Some of them are rubbish, some of them are very good, some of them very raw. But this film, The Bar, is directed by one of the greatest Spanish directors, Alex de la Iglesia. I knew this film was going to be good, and you missed out, my friend, because this film was great.
Oh, yeah, totally. Look, I, again, talking to you before the festival started and talking to people out there, I knew it was going to be good, but I also knew that the good part you and I have is we happily split up and go and see other films, so we cover all bases. So it was the one of the ones where you told me it's going to be good, I knew it's going to be good, I thought, well, you go and check it out, I'll check out something else, so we can compare notes. And I think it was a safe bet to miss, because I'm guessing it's going to get a release, right? I'm guessing it's going to get, you know, you're going to get the full work. So,
there's no question of that. I just remember you saying to me, you're just reading through that plot, you're like, it doesn't grab
the plot.
Not what these films are about. Because, like,
No.
Honestly, it's a small bar in the middle of Madrid. It's just, as you imagine, an everyday bar would be, but, you know, a Spanish everyday bar. And all of a sudden, a customer's leaving, fatally shot, as he exits the bar, and there's pandemonium, and all of a sudden these people are stuck in the bar. Someone's just been shot leaving the bar. Don't know what's going on. They don't know if there's a sniper out there. They don't know what's this, that, and the other. The streets normally, which is busy because in Spain, these streets are busy. In Madrid, certainly. Everyone's gone. You don't know what's going on. And then the film, the director just does so well. Just tells this fantastic story. You know, spend a portion of the film staring out the window, what's going on? Then then it moves on. It, like, they start looking at each other. Is it something to do with who they are? They all start to suddenly doubt who they all are. And the great thing about it is it constantly shifts. Everyone is slightly different. There's like a vagrant there. There's the guy who works behind the bar. There's the businessman. There's, you know, the student. Oh, no, the executive. It's got a bit of everything. And you start to learn all these stories, and it isn't done with boring exposition where everyone's just sort of builds up their little backstory. It all happens during the action. You find out who these people are. Mm-hmm. And it's, like I said, it's just so well done. There's so many things they could get out of it. The premise of the bar, that's just the launch pad to right. bigger, better things. And yes,
yeah. Brilliant. No, totally. I remember walking out of my film and bumping into you guys and like, oh man, it was great. And everyone said it was great. And I think everyone was sort of saying it's one of the top picks of the film, of the festival. So I'm glad you saw it, mate. I'm glad it played well as it did.
I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's one of them ones where, and we'll cover this next few days of the Fright Fest that we talk about, where we do this quite often. We do split up and we do try and compare notes. And I think it's good to cover those bases because, again, it's all subjective, right? Some films we've walked out of where you said Mao is rubbish. I'm like, actually, Marissa's pretty good, or vice versa.
Yeah.
So I'm glad. Yeah.
I'm happy I saw a great film, Mao. Please tell me which film you saw. Tell me about Third Night.
So I saw Third Night. Third Night was really good. It's this creepy Aussie horror. Now, there's a lot of good horror coming out of Australia right now and New Zealand as well. And they do the creepy, dark stuff really, really well. We know some of the good ones we've seen, like Wolf Freak and that. And then there's this one. It's Third Night. So the premise is a couple moves into this Australian outback orchard farm type place. And they settle in. It's all fine, a bit creepy because you're in the outback, and there's this person watching them and sort of, you know, playing with them and toying with them, not in any sort of crazy way, just sort of, you know, making them feel uneasy. And the premise is basically they get sort of terrorized for a bit, they get hyped for a bit, and then on the third night of moving in, they die. And that's the premise of the film. Now, there's more to it than that, because the synopsis gives it away as to what's going to happen, what the premise is about. But it's the lead up, it's the build up, it's how it all happens and why.
I like the idea of this one because, like, living in Islington, it's just normal to hear police sirens in the background all the time. And I have, like, been to stay at a cottage sort of in Norfolk. It was complete silence around there. Yeah. And I was, and that's the scariest thing because I'm imagining some lovely local fellows with chainsaws are going to like kick down the door and cut us up.
Yeah. And this has got that sort of, not that sort of feel, but it's got that sort of, you know, out in the open, you know, exposed elements kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
The poster's got this hair kitty kitty thing going on the poster. And there's another one where I got a t-shirt from it as well. There's a kitten reference to it. So there's a kitten.
Okay.
Yeah. Hair kitty kitty. And the t-shirt I got says it on it as well. And there's kitten references or cat references in the film throughout, and I won't spoil for you why the poster has hair kitty kitty, but it's a good way of it's a weird way of looking at the cats and what cats do, and I'll leave it at that. But it's worth checking out. It's a good film, actually. I liked it, and again, I'm glad I saw that, knowing that you were going to enjoy The Bar. That way I don't feel that we both saw the same thing and we missed out on the third night. So we saw that, right? And I think as well, and then after that we split up again, didn't we?
Yes.
And you saw Mansfield 667?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, it was a documentary. I liked it. I mean, it wasn't a horror film per se. It was, like I said, it's a documentary on Jane Mansfield, I'm thinking.
You saw the film, mate.
Yeah. And she, and a lot of, not actually facts, more rumors and things. She got mixed up with Anton LaVey, who headed up the Church of Satan.
Right.
And they did, I think she started hanging out with him a bit for the publicity, and they did some photo shoots, and all the rumors and chit chat between people around them, they pieced together a story to make it seem like she basically got in with Satan, and that might have had a bearing on the unfortunate accident she had.
Okay.
Yeah, the untimely death of James Mansfield.
Right.
Another good poster, right? Interesting. Yeah, and it was a funky little poster.
Yeah.
And they did it in a really interesting way. Not, you know, they got like what was it, the students of the university in Leeds, not Leeds mm-hmm. Uni, the other one, it's changed its name. I think it was Leeds Met, but it's changed its name to the, I think I'm thinking Leeds Beckett. I'm really bad with this stuff. They provided some dance routines around it. So there's a lot of 60s dancing and things in between snippets of photos and footage, mm-hmm. and it's all put together in a really sort of kitsch way. Yeah, it was good. Right. Though, it was a good thing to sort of watch, I guess, on TV. Right. Really, I really felt like I really should have watched some good slasher film. But what did you see, Mal?
I saw the remake of Inside. So Inside is this French movie that was out.
Oh, okay.
2006, 2007.
Never saw it.
No, it's basically this premise is woman's having a kid, and another woman wants to steal the kid for various reasons. Well, for one reason, which is evident in the film, which
just
I don't want to spoil.
A stranger or someone?
I can't say because it'll give away the film.
Mm.
Yeah, well, it's obvious, mate, because this film's pretty shit. I didn't like the film. It was a bad remake. They cocked up the ending of the original film. If you're a novice going into this film, it's got great suspense, but the ending is they've changed the ending. It's got a very Hollywood ending. And I walked out thinking, what the hell? Apparently, the original directors of the original film were in the cinema at the time. Apparently, it would have been good to see what they say. But the reason why I saw this film was because the director of Sleep Tight is behind this. Now, Sleep Tight was another creepy, sort of stalkery film. Yeah. And this film we saw at Fright Fest, which is really, really, really good. So I thought, I'll give it a go. And the remake was poor. So
he directed it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he's, it's from the director of Sleep Tight comes this remake of Inside. And it was bad. Now, the hint behind this was...
Miguel... Ingel Vivas.
Let's not dwell too much about this, mate, because it wasn't very good.
And Sleep Tight was really good. I like Sleep Tight.
Yeah, exactly. But the hint was it was in the smallest cinema, smallest Discovery screen in Prince Charles that tells you the kind of thing it was aiming for.
They
having
also
said that,
directed Kidnapped.
Yes, I haven't seen that.
Oh, mate, that's badass. Home Invasion.
Well, there you go, right?
Brutal.
Two badass films and then this pile of shit.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Move on. Next film, because it wasn't very good at all. I walked out thinking, what the hell did I watch? Why did I watch it?
I'll try and avoid moving to the next one because the next one was terrible. Jackals.
What? Jackals? That was pretty bad, wasn't it?
Yeah, it
looked all right, you know, from the premise of it. It looked like it could be half decent. This, you know, cult family thingy going on, and they're trying to save their kid, and the cult's trying to get the kid back, and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no invasion. They turn up. They've all got the animal masks on their heads.
Imagery's great, I've got to say. Imagery is great. These animal masks, light shining behind them, dark forest, creek. It looks really good. Think, wow, this is really cool.
It's a second film from our friend Stephen Dorff.
Yes.
Providing the veteran role in the film.
But it wasn't very good. Too many plot holes for me. It was just like, what the hell? Get on with it. What are you going to do this for?
Yeah, because
the ending was a big twist.
Stephen Dorff was like the guy who knew how to deal with all this stuff, like the ex-army, whatever. And as soon as there's a bit of trouble outside, he runs out the front door to see what's going on. And, of course, they catch him. And, you know,
it
doesn't matter. They're always going to see it, Mal. I just give an example of how bad it was. Okay, there's another one. There's another bit. I'll give away another bit. With one of the kids, he makes a run for it. Remember? He says, I'm the fastest one. I'll run off and get help. And he makes it over to the van, and he reaches the glove compartment, and there's an animal mask, and he freaks out because he's basically gotten the cult's van. So you sat there, or I don't know if you were sat there. I was sat there screaming, put the mask on. Put it on, and you could turn up and go, all right, Bob. You know.
Bob. No, I know, mate, and a lot of it does that. Even the end of it,
He didn't do that.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of it was just like, what are you doing? It didn't make sense to me. I was just like, it looked great, but it just fell apart for me. It just like, it didn't work. Sorry, mate. Try again. So, should we move on from Jackals quickly to, I don't know what you want to talk about next, mate. You're going to love
talking
about this.
No, I don't want to talk about it. This is a couple of bad runs for me.
Look. All right, so the film we're talking about, I didn't see it. I chose to see Ruin Me, by the way, which I'll come up to in a minute.
I tried to get tickets for that. but they sold out in front of my eyes.
So I ended up buying a ticket for it because I was hyped up for it, and the director and the writers were kind enough to give me a t-shirt beforehand to promo it, to sell it to me. I'm like, yeah, fair enough. I thought, well, I got an exclusive t-shirt. And
I said, look,
yeah, it's a great t-shirt. And I thought, well, I'm buying into this. And I'll come to that in a minute once you talk about Attack of the Adult Babies.
There's not much to say, really. Attack of the Adult Babies. I mean, how do you think that's going to play out?
Looks and nappies.
Yeah, so it was pretty poor, and the only saving grace was it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, because I've seen some terrible films in the past, and I thought this was going to be another one in the long line of terrible films.
But was it terrible because you expected more, because it was Dominic Brunt and Bait was really, really good, or was it terrible because it was just terrible?
No, it was just crap. No, Bait was really good.
Really? It was great, I know.
Yeah, but Attack of the Adult Babies, no. There's like some really rich guys meet up at some secluded mansion, and they dress up as babies. And then there's a service provided for them where they all get an individual nurse who looks after them. And at the same time, there's...
What do you mean looks after them?
Well, sort of, I don't know, does all that kinky stuff. Not nothing sexual, just all... Yeah, just fetish stuff like matron type stuff, you know. Clean their nappies, mate. Burp them, you know. A bunch of fat old blokes. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, right.
And then there's a whole other storyline where these people have to break in and get something. They don't know it's a mansion with these adult baby men. And, yeah, it's... You're not missing on anything, mate. You picked well. This is probably the first time at the festival you picked well, avoiding this and seeing something else.
You're probably right, actually, unless you want to count Third Night as a good film, which I liked. Anyway.
No, I won't count that, because the bar was...
Yeah, because you saw the bar.
The bar got raised, literally.
You did, right. So I saw Ruin Me. Now, Ruin Me is a movie about these horror scare experiences thingies. I don't know if anyone saw Fear Inc. Did you see Fear Inc?
I did see Fear Inc. I really liked it.
It's good.
I don't know if that's released anywhere yet. Because I definitely
want to
see that again.
I'll watch it again. But anyway, it's similar to that if you've seen Fear Inc. It's basically they go on this experience and they scare the hell out of you and you've just got to go with it.
Is it comedy? Is it?
It's not straight horror. It's got a bit of tongue in cheek. There's a bit of comedy in there. It's made for a mainstream audience, so it's not like out and out gore horror. You don't actually see much gore in it at all, actually, which probably means it's going to get a decent release and a lower certificate release. But I liked it. I liked this movie. It was a good watch because it was again this experience which you're going on with this person or these people, and obviously you've got the person that's not been to these things before. You've got a guy who's sort of trying to date with his girlfriend, and you've got some emo kids. Who think they're all that, and you've got this comedic fella who adds comedic value because he's just there as a bumbling sort of, you know, nerd kind of person, and then you've got this sort of unknown loner quiet person. So it takes all the cliche boxes, and then it goes through, you're in this forest and they let it loose on you, and they sort of, you know, they scare you and they put you in a position to solve mysteries and crime, solve mysteries and puzzles to get to the next clue. But this is backstory.
I'd like to do something like that. I think that sounds pretty
cool. Yeah, I would. But there's a backstory between the main girl in it and her boyfriend, and there's some stuff that's unresolved stuff, and she's got issues that she's recovering from. He's playing a recovering addict, and she's trying to get, you know, move on from her life, and it touches on a lot of that, and a lot of it is, you know, stuff going on in the head, and it plays out with her fears. It's quite cleverly done. I just wish there'd been a bit more horror and, like, killing and, you know, that sort of stuff. It was more plot driven than kill driven. You didn't see the kills as much, or you don't see many kills. But it was a good film nonetheless. I like watching it. I like the fact that, you know, I'm glad I saw it. I'd watch it, you know, with a bunch of mates again.
Have your buddies at Ruin Me actually told you when this thing's coming out, then, so I can catch it?
I don't know, because it's still the festival circuit. So I've seen the tweets, and it's still getting picked up at all festivals at the moment.
Oh, I guess, yeah. Some of these things, they don't know if they got releases. They don't know how it's going to distribute.
It's on the festival circuit, and it's getting a lot of good hype. And I recommend it. I'd say watch it. Watch it with a bunch of mates. Again, a lot of these films, and it's just like most films, right? You watch them with a certain crowd, you appreciate it differently. And I think this film is one to watch with your mates. If you watch it on your own, you like it, but I think you'll be better watch it with a bunch of mates and just sort of, you know, then you have conversation. But yeah, good watch. And it seemed like I picked well and not watching Attack of the Adult Babies.
Well, I'll be watching it by myself, Mal, because I doubt I'll be able to talk my family into watching it here. Oh, okay, brilliant, brilliant.
I'll come round.
Okay, you'll provide the group for me.
Yes, definitely. And yeah, then after this, it leads us to Hatchet 10th anniversary.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't lead me to Hatchet, mate. I haven't. So,
did you watch it? You weren't there, were you?
No. Why would I go see it? It sort of needs its own little build up in that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, of course.
There's a series of Hatchet films.
Yes.
And this was on the program as the 10th anniversary showing of Hatchet. They got the director there. They got a lead actor there. Not enough to sell it to me. I've never seen the Hatchet films. I don't give a monkey's. and I trust Duke Mitchell, who put up their film called Cold Hell. But you quickly go with the Hatchet. What happened, right, Mal? We got to the day.
So it was not at the 10th anniversary director's cut. It was actually a new Hatchet movie called Victor Crowley, or Victor Crowley Lives, whatever it's going to be called. I don't know. But it was a new Hatchet movie, Hatchet 4, effectively.
Is it a reboot? Was it another?
No. It's just another a follow-on. Okay. It's a new bunch of people revisit Victor Crowley. And look, right, it Hatchet film was a Hatchet film. It was going to be a spoof. It was going to be a comedy. It was going to be some crazy outlandish death scenes. But it was great fun. So Adam Green came on, first of all, and Adam Green could work a crowd. He came on and gave a intro to the film, intro to him, intro to George A. Romero passing away and that sort of stuff and all his influences. And it really got us into that moment. And as a Fright Fest crowd, it was a Fright Fest film through and through. It literally played as it should have done. If you like slasher films, you've got some great slasher kills, some Hatchet style kills where basically there's one scene where the woman's phone and her arm goes through from one end of her body to the other end of the body.
What? I don't understand. Explain it again.
It goes up her body, so in between her legs and through the other end.
Goes through her body.
Another woman's arm.
There's two women.
One woman's arm is ripped off and goes from one end to the one end of another woman's body to the other end of a woman's
body. Out her
mouth. Yes, and it's brilliant. And you end up laughing at the end of that scene. That's how the film was put together. It's quite a funny scene.
I'm not convinced, mate.
It's fun. And I'm not selling it. I'm not selling it in the right way because there's context behind that scene. But it's a funny scene. There's some funny comedies, but it's a silly, funny comedy.
Well, I did hear that it was, there was suddenly, it's the brand new Victor Crowley. And I thought, I still thought that's not enough to convince me because, I still hadn't seen all the Hatchet films.
And to be fair,
the hell am I going to jump in and see the fourth one?
To be fair, I think it was timed perfectly because after the day we had had, you'd seen The Bar, I'd seen Third Night, and then after that, it had been mediocre to not very good. And then I saw Ruin Me. But I think Hatchet was exactly what was needed. It was the right sort of crowd for the right sort of film, and it ticked all the boxes, some crazy kills, some mad slasher scenes, some good comedy. It worked. It was almost like Airplane meets a slasher film, right? In that sort of context of the comedy. And I liked it for what it did. And at the end of it, Adam Green got pretty much a standing ovation because of the fact that it just played perfectly to that crowd. And if you're a Hatchet fan, you'll love it. If you're a slasher fan, you'll like it. Some people walked out thinking, fair enough, because if you're not a slasher fan, you won't get it. But if you like slasher films, you will like it.
I'm not convinced.
It's all slasher films. I mean, the first Hatchet was great. And then they do peter out a bit, right?
That's the segue into my film, Cold Hell.
Yes, which is doing really well.
German film, I believe. Yep. Yes. Yep. And I got noted down, tense serial killer cat and mouse thriller. The mouse in this scenario is a female badass kickboxing taxi driver. Fight.
Yes.
Honestly, mate, it was it was definitely one worth catching. This one is coming to Shudder, so it'll be streaming on Shudder service. And it was so good. Because the opening scene, right, this is where the problem all begins. You've got this strong female, you know, like I said, female taxi driver. She sort of drives taxis during the day and she's doing a kickboxing class at night. And not just any old, like, it's proper Thai kickboxing, elbows and knees and everything. She's at home, right? I think there's some sort of noise in the flat across the way. She like looks out her window, and the scene is there is a female lying on the floor, sort of mutilated on part of her leg, and I think the main part was like her thigh was mutilated, bits of skin had been taken off, and you're thinking, oh my god, and she's staring at all this, and there's something else going on as well. It was the whole MO of the serial killer. I can't even remember the MO properly yet. And this is brilliant, mate. She suddenly realizes, oh fuck, I'm actually looking at the serial killer, and he's looking at me. He sort of stood off to the side. You can't see him. You just see his shadow. And she's like, looked out the window, and she's staring face to face with him. And then that's the plot. Like, he is next after her. He's like onto her. Yeah. And it plays out so well. And like I said, she's a kickboxer, and she is a kickboxer. She has this wicked move of getting, like, first he's just doing it at her kickboxing gym with some guy who fancies himself a bit and is a bit dirty when he's fighting. She has enough. She basically sort of somehow does some sort of scissor move where she holds onto the leg, pulls him to the ground. His head is completely, his arms are all like wrapped up in her legs. His head is free. And she starts like smacking him in the head repeatedly. She does his move later on with the serial killer. You got to imagine she can like punch, kick, elbows and all that. And the serial killer's got bloody great knife. That's his weapon.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's crazy.
I can hear the passion in your voice behind this film. You're really excited by this film.
I like this film. This is the film before, I need now. I need this.
Yes. Yeah, no, totally. Before the festival started, it was getting a lot of good press. I think it played at a couple of festivals beforehand. It won some awards and done really, really well. And I was umming and ahhing myself because Evren, one of the guys at Duke Mitchell, was tweeting about it quite heavily as well.
I did see it on a smaller screen. It was a small screen.
But I was tempted, but then I thought, let me just play it safe with Hatchet. But I'm glad you liked it. Again, I think I liked what I saw. Hatchet was great, and I loved it. And Cold Hell was going to play well anyway, from what I heard.
I might come back to this quickly later on with another film with a strong female character. This one has a strong female character that's all the rage these days, and she was strong, and she was definitely female,
which is needed given how the genre was going. But after this, we split again, didn't we? So we've done a lot of splitting this on the Saturday, because then last film was, you saw Game of Death.
I did.
Jumanji meets some sort of horror thing, right?
Yeah, not so good. It was quite interesting that they didn't have much build up. They're like, oh, let's play this game. They pull this game out and they're like, oh, it requires you to put your finger here. They all put their finger on it. Actually, it's like a little blood test. It suddenly takes their blood and then the game starts. And it starts like this, mate, right? Imagine there's seven of you and you all put your finger. So you're in this game now. And the game informs you have to kill 26 people. And each time you don't kill someone within a certain time period, one of your lot's going to die, one of the seven. And it's like, okay. And 26 just seemed like a bizarre number to pick to start with. But anyway, when the time runs out and they haven't killed someone in that amount of time.
Sure, it's not between 2 and 6, like game boards, 2 and 6 players.
I like it, Mal. You see, all this stuff's going over my head, but you're right in there. You're like reading all the stuff on screen. All I know was there were heads exploding.
I didn't watch it, mate.
And that was good. Right. Heads. You're just hearing the synopsis. You're like, I can analyze that.
It sounds brilliant, Mal.
Heads were blowing up if people weren't doing it in time. But then I was sat there thinking, okay, so they quickly work out they got to kill people. People have to die so that they can live. And I'm thinking, why don't you just go and kill some dogs and cats? You didn't, you know, we're in the rule book to say it has to be a human being. But no, they didn't go past that at all. They just like...
So you just stamp on 26 ants and we thought it sorted, mate.
Yeah, you could do. Yeah, you could do. But they obviously didn't do that.
It sounds like, sounds rubbish, mate.
They don't count. They start by counting the first few, but then after a while, I think they just got bored and they roll into some old people's home, and they start like offing a bunch of them. Not old people, actually, it's a place of terminal illness. It's okay. It's just not that good.
So before we go into where I was, another friend of mine who saw Game of Death loved it, absolutely loved it.
Why?
In fact, he was sat. He just liked the way it's put together, the commentary it was giving, everything else. In fact, I was in the Phoenix with him that night, Saturday night, and he was talking to directors about 2 a.m. about it. So he loved it. So it is subjective. I was at the Duke Mitchell party. Now, the Duke Mitchell party is bloody fantastic. This is my second one of I've ever been to. Last year I went to it because I walked out of that Blood Feast. Yeah, I walked out of Blood Feast.
Are you saying it's worse than...
No. Only because Blood Feast was playing, but the people I was sat next to, they're like, we're going, Duke Mitchell, mate, you got to come. It's a laugh. I'm like, all right, fair enough. And I did, and I'm glad I went. Anyway, I went there again this year. Now, Duke Mitchell Party, what it is, it's... If you don't know what Duke Mitchell Party is or who Duke Mitchell are, it's... Think of all the worst stuff you can see on YouTube, like the worst adverts or the worst film premises or anything that's just completely bonkers. They'll find it, and then they'll hype it up, and they'll get a director or an actor or somebody related to the movies to introduce it, and you just crack up laughing. And then every time they finish that, they give the person a whiskey shot. That's the rule, right?
Some of the stuff is like stuff that later that's published on YouTube, right?
Oh yeah. There's mad stuff. So it varies, man. So we saw.
So you'll be tweeting some of that stuff out, right? Some of the good stuff.
Yeah. Because we saw random stuff. We saw this random Nazi thingy, which was we were laughing at. I don't know what it was, man. I forgot now. I had a few drinks in me. We saw this film about, it was mental. I think there was Bridget Nielsen in it. I think Bruce Willis was in it. It would look, El Dorado? Yeah, El Dorado, I think it was. Not the TV program, but just check it out. Yeah, this film called El Dorado. Everyone's in it, and it looks top shit. So, you know, they'll find these random things to put on there. Anyway, so the whole thing is you've got Paul McAvoy's in there and Ian Rattray's in it. Alan doesn't hang around, obviously. And you got like, we had Graham Skipper in there, we had Barbara Crampton in there, and they all sit there with you in the crowd, and they get up, introduce a clip, and they hype it up, and you just crack up laughing, and it's just the most fun, man. And they give freebies away. The running joke is to give shit DVDs away. So this time they gave the Bodyguard.
Last year I got Power Rangers, and
all right,
series 3 of Wentworth Prison, I think.
There you go. But Duke Mitchell is they you don't get a good DVD, you get like a crap DVD. Although Arrow are giving a good little a goodie bag away. So Doom Witch Party was great fun. I'm glad I went. It was just a hilarious laugh. You sat there with all the crowd. You're just watching these random clips. Graham Skipper's clip actually didn't work. It was his 11th grade, no, year age 11 video drama thingy. And the video, the laptop froze. So he reenacted that clip with his sister. And they played out this little thing he was doing. It's really, really funny. So you see people in a different light, and I think it's really good fun. So I was there at the Duke Mitchell party while you were suffering through Game of Death, by the looks of it.
Alrighty.
Yeah, and then, after this, you went home. I went to the Phoenix, was drinking till about 2:30 in the morning, and then we're next up for Sunday.
Yes.
And Sunday was Killing Ground, first up.
I heard some good stuff about this. I didn't see this. As you know, to tell me about Killing Ground, because I think I want to catch this.
So another Aussie random messed up dark creepy thriller. It's about this couple, the guy in the outback again. I'm telling you one thing for starters, mate. I'm not going to Australia. I'm not going to the outback. Staying in a hotel in the city. I'm not going anywhere near the outback. And Killing Ground is basically they go out in this for New Year's Eve or Christmas. They go out to the sort of camping thing, and they camp and they see some weird gangs on, and they see some creepy locals being creepy and weird and stalkery and stuff, and it starts off all right, and then it slowly descends into this weird messed up what the hell's going on in this movie kind of thing. It's not gory in your face, but it's creepy, and how the Aussie guys do it, they do put it creepy into your head and say there you go, make whatever you want of it. And there's a good premise on that, because there's a couple who are there, husband and, well, girlfriend and boyfriend, and there's a family. And then it alternates between timelines. So you're in the present moment and then catching up in a story. Say this happened while, you know, in the last few days. So it builds up to a crescendo of some total madness where, you know, these two locals are gang being nuts. I don't want to spoil it because there's lots of build up to it. I don't want anyone to ruin it. But effectively, there's a tent that's been abandoned. The owners don't return. And this couple think, what the hell's going on? And they start to suspect something really weird and mad. And then suddenly all hell breaks loose and it all goes nuts. And then you've got this suspense thing going on. What's going to go with these guys? What's going to happen to them? Where's the family? And then there's this scene. Now, I'm watching this film first thing in the morning, right? First thing in the morning, I'm watching this scene.
Yep.
And there's a scene, I'm going to set it up to you best as I can without giving it away. There's a scene with one of the bad guys, this young couple, and a baby. And the baby's like a toddler at best. It's not a gross scene, but it's a, whoa, you can't do that on movie screen scene. It's not nothing bad, it's nothing gross and weird and, like, you know, creepy in that respect. There's something happens to the kid and think, shit, they did that. Oh, wow, fuck. And that was the only film throughout 25 films that I did sort of move back in my chair and thinking, shit, you went there. So watch it for that reason and check it out, Killing Ground. It's in the third act, and you do sort of think, whoa, you just did that. And watching it first up is hard, man. 10 in the morning, thinking, whoa, first thing in the morning, you see that. And then the worst part is the end, in a good way, not in a bad way. The end, the credits roll, and you're thinking, what's happened? And then you sort of try and work out in your head, shit, did they? Didn't they? What happened? Da, 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 da. And it just goes, and it's great. And it's one of the top films of the festival. It really is.
Alrighty. Okay. So I'll definitely keep an eye out for that. So I went to see the short film showcase. And yes. You actually nipped in time to see the film we wanted to see, which was a film we backed on Kickstarter. So it was great to see a film at Fright Fest with my name coming up with a credit in there as the backer. The Bloodshed film.
That's it. Yes.
Proper 80s. Killer Shed.
Yes.
And
it's bonkers, man. It's bonkers. Yeah, it's bonkers. It's funny.
It was some really funny moments, but it was just. So, like, when they just, some of the 80s stuff was really, they really nailed it.
For a short film, it gets you going. Again, we're talking about it longer because we backed it, but it's done by James Moran and Cat Davies. James Moran, you know, done Zombies vs. Cockneys, and, you know, he's an accomplished guy, and their sense of humor, just shows on the screen. And it's great fun. You know, it doesn't take itself seriously. It just is what it is. So check it out, short film. I literally ran from the end of Killing Ground to sneak in and see the end of that.
Yeah, there were some other ones in there as well. I can't really remember which ones.
There was with the random aliens eating everyone.
Yeah, that was all right actually.
So, but then after that, you saw the end, didn't you?
I did. You tried to convince me to what to see? Our Evil.
No, I saw Mind Hack, which I bought.
Yes. Trying to give me to go. He tried to mind hack me and make me go to Mind Hack. And I was like, no. Well,
the premise was good, mate. So, again, the premise was good because Mind Hack premise was this guy's got a troubling mind. You know, he's got issues and they manifest in a sort of weird sort of way. And he's trying to control that. And I think, this could be interesting, man. It could be one of the Mindfuck films. But it slowly becomes this random, weird, teeny boppy kind of. Hacked the mind with these random gadgets that are too, you know, tap into the mind and hack into it. And the dialogue was all like weird. Like, I don't know, it just didn't seem right. And it's just like some kid had made the movie, some 12-year-old sort of put a film together and said, there you go, here's some shit dialogue, here's some shit acting, and here's some shit premise, work it out.
Oh, dude, how you thought that film could compete with Zombies, man? Zombies, come on.
Well, again, I done my usual. I sort of decided to watch a film I probably wouldn't watch anywhere else. Check it out. And if I like it, I like it. If I don't, I don't. I can probably watch what's on the main screen. However, I walked out of mine deck about halfway through and got some food.
Even worse.
There you go.
So
the end any good?
The end was quite good, actually. An Italian film. Basically, this guy, he's at the office and mm-hmm. he basically gets stuck in the lift.
Right.
And then the zombie apocalypse happens.
Perfect.
And it was really well done. It was quite interesting in that, you know, at certain points you want to be out of that lift, you want to be somewhere safe. But then, you know, at moments the lift is the safest place to be. No one can get in and no one can get out. And there was some interesting stuff in there, and it had enough gore and things. And yeah, it was okay. It was quite a nice one. It stayed in that big screen, and
right.
I was very happy I did. I don't know where the hell you were, Mal, because you missed out on a hell of a film, which was Double Date.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be good from the start. I remember telling you about it. One of the guys saw it at pre-festival. He goes, Mal, he's going to bring the house down. It's a righteous comedy. Watch it. But I wanted to watch the film I saw for different reasons, so I'll come to that. But you can cover Double Date for now.
So Double Date, it was the guy, like, his first time film, and it's a comedy horror. And he went up on stage, and I swear to God, he mentions the film you shouldn't mention, which is Shaun of the Dead, because all of a sudden he mentions all these people trying to bring out films that are comedies, but it's sort of a horror. It's a tough act to follow when you got something like Shaun of the Dead. And he's like, yeah, you don't mention something like that, but he did it. He went there, and then we watched this film, and it was hilarious. Yes, it's got Michael Socha in it. You mm-hmm. might know him mm-hmm. from This Is England, those series of films. So it's about Jim, 29-year-old virgin. His mate's going to try and fix him up. Bumps into, they sort of get on this double date with these two girls who, little do they know, are looking for males to murder. And they've got some sort of satanic thing going on when they're going to raise their dad from the dead. And they need all these dead guys and a virgin to top it off. Unfortunately for the guy, he's trying to find these lucky knights. But it's really good. It's a nice set piece of it. And it's a wicked fight at the end. And it works really well, and he just loved it. And I remember telling the director that, saying I loved it so much. The only thing I didn't like about it was the name Double Date, because that just sounds rubbish. But we were chatting about it, and I thought, wait a minute, this is just as Fright Fest had finished and at the pub, and I thought I shouldn't have been speaking to him, because he was pissed as a fart trying to talk seriously to me about his film. And I felt really sorry, so I made my excuses and ran. So go on, Mal, what did you see?
I saw Our Evil, and again, one of the ones I've been following on Twitter, and I've been following this guy on Twitter, and this guy had been really hyping his own film, and I thought, okay, I'll give him benefit of doubt, let's see what it's about. And guy's name Samuel Jalli, or Galli, depending on how you pronounce it, Brazilian guy, put this film together, and I read about it, and it looks at evil, and it looks at how evil is carried around and portrayed in someone's mind or whatever it is, and the effect it has on that person, and then how it manifests into, you know, your soul and you know, your sort of your being. And I thought, this could be fantastic, you know. And I really pinned it down as, you know, the one that would probably shock. And I thought, all right, let's check it out. So I went and saw the movie, and it's very, you know, sort of Spanish-y, Brazilian-y sort of type of film, where it's quite arty, a lot of loud screams and loud noises and stuff, and that sort of, you know, really brings you into the film. But it is basically about a man with his spiritual powers. It starts off pretty brutal, man. It's an assassin guy, and he kills someone in a pretty gruesome way. And he's like, bang, straight away takes you to there. He's like, well, all right, fair enough. I know where I am with this film. And this guy's got his powers, and he's told by his mentor that his demonic entity is going to return to destroy his daughter's soul. So he's got to take measures to prevent this. So he's got to protect his daughter from being overpowered by this demonic entity.
Okay.
And it's set in this sort of, you know, it's set in Sao Paulo. It's a very seedy, very, you know, like, sort of at the bottom end of, you know, society in terms of, you know, degradation and what's going on. And it captures it all really, really well. And then there's this serial killer guy who's trying to protect his daughter. He's got this spirit going on, and it's a mishmash of all that sort of stuff. But at the same time, it's shot at a very sort of, you know, manageable pace. And he's sort of on this journey with this guy, and he's sort of like plodding along with the film. And I liked it when it finished. I thought that was a great watch. I don't want to, there's not much I can say about it without giving it much away, but it's great watch to watch it for what it is and what it does and how it captured it. Really, really good. I thought, you know what? I like that. And I sat in the Q&A. I found out in the Q&A that this bloke sold his apartment to make a movie because he goes, they get zero funding in Brazil to make these sort of movies, but he wanted to make it because he wanted to make this type of film. So yeah. He sold his apartment, you know, he put his own money into it. He goes, look, here's my labor love. And I thought, you know what? Good on you, mate. And I respect that him for doing that, but also I was also glad I saw it because given the fact that he's having trouble with getting his film done or getting his film, you know, marketed out there, I may not see it again. But it's a really clever film. It's really well done. It's very visceral, very dark, but it does grab you, mate. So it's worth checking out, definitely.
Okay. If it gets released anywhere.
If it gets out. But I'll move on to that because we can talk about Mayhem all night, can't we?
No.
Which was next up. No? Did you see it?
I did.
Do you like it?
I did. what I liked about it, Mal, was Joe Lynch. In my eyes...
He's mad.
He's leveled up. I've never liked his stuff before. I can safely say that now that I've found a film that I actually like of his, because he's a really nice guy. And every time I bump into him, I feel like I have to say, I love this, I love that. But I don't love any of them. But Mayhem was good. He did it really well. Because we also saw Evelyn with Salma Hayek, which was okay, but it was that still sort of B movie level. But Mayhem was a lot better. A little wordy at the beginning, maybe, in exposition, you know, getting everything set up. But really well done. You know, what is it? Yes. Like, I thought it was like office politics acted out via hand-to-hand combat. It was...
pretty much. Yeah. That is the thing, isn't it? Where the people suffer from this rage thing called ID7 or something. And, you know, whatever that rage, you just portray it out on people when you just go for it. And it's the social,
so everyone gets infected with ID7.
Yes.
And then the authorities close off the building. So no one's allowed out. They have to survive 7 hours or however long. And
that's right.
Because it's an office, at an office, you hate everyone more or less.
Yeah.
Or you fancy whoever, or you know, all that sort of stuff, office politics. With this virus, everyone infected, it suddenly amplifies it all. So everyone's everyone's fighting and everyone's
And there's some great, some great fight scenes in here and some good dialogue as well. But also it's good because it does capture that office politics thing really, really well, where you hate that person. And if you could smack him in the mouth or whack him with a baseball bat, you would. And this film has let you do that. So it lets you sort of almost, you know, be on that person's side. So, you know what? Yeah, I've got a person in my office that I could just easily smack up side of the head, you know, more than once. And you do. And it does it really well. And you root for the guy and you root for the whole thing at the end. And it's cliched, you know, people at top level, looking down at bottom level, you know, you don't want to be that person to miss out on the opportunities. That's really well, and I liked it. It's one of the top films again, and it was, you know, some good blood and guts in there. Then we had Villainess.
Yes, I was looking forward to this film, my friend. Again, another one has an absolutely epic poster. In the build up to this film at the festival, I avoided all trailers, stuff like that, or I just kept looking at the poster again, and it evokes in my mind, I know it's easy to say that because it's Korean, but it evokes Old Boy. And I just thought, it just looks so badass. The poster, I need to get hold of that poster. It's just brilliant. Sat through the film, we watched it, and I have to tell him out. Didn't quite work. The Villainess. So I think I wrote at the time, the Villainess was good, but I feel the opening action scenes were so epic that the film feels like it falls flat halfway through. And then thinking about it, I don't think any action sequence in that film matched the opening 10 minutes.
So my synopsis was a lot less politely put. When I walked out of the cinema, I said to somebody, it shot its load in the first 5 minutes. And after that, it couldn't recover.
It's too top heavy, wasn't it?
Yeah, way too heavy. And look, but the thing is, talking to people who are fans of the genre, the Japanese horror and the sort of samurai stuff, they do say that, look, these sort of films do have that. So the biggest thing for me was this romance scene or romance period of the film where there's the falling in love of the main character with this fella. And there's a lull, but apparently it's a known trait with a lot of these sort of types of films.
Yeah, so I thought about it as like, because it's a Korean film, it's a reflection of sort of Korean values. And so you've got to remember those types of things. So maybe it for us, it feels like it's gone really gone really flat. But it's sort of reflecting things there.
And I think it's a good look at how that works, because it paints a lovely picture. It paints a lovely story. It's, you know, it's top heavy from the start, but it almost, you know, restarts again.
It just felt weird. It's called The Villainess. You're thinking, yeah. it's about the female character, right? She's the poster. She's got a gun. She's a badass, right? And then in the film, they're like, oh, she's single. She must be married off. And it's like a storyline. It's just
exactly, and then it becomes all that. Yeah, and for me, it didn't work either. I walked out thinking, oh man, they didn't really grab me. It didn't do much.
And I felt this was also reminded me of Cold Hell, because I mentioned about the female character there. She's got some issues with her past, and it is real life. She doesn't want to talk about it. All these people like try and help her. You know, tell me what's the problem. She doesn't want to talk about it. The only way she can work it out is through anger.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. What saved the night for me was the karaoke afterwards. I know you weren't there, but
no, it was
basically just a piss up and people singing random songs. The highlight for me was at the end of it. So it's basically a load of Fright Festers, right? And Paul McAvoy. And in this case, it was Graham Skipper and Joe Lynch. Adam Green was there.
Did you tell Joe Lynch that you loved Mayhem?
I did indeed, actually. Yeah, we had a good chat about it. But I can top that, mate. We ended a karaoke with me and three of my other mates and Joe Lynch and Graham Skipper and Paul McAvoy singing Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, the karaoke horror.
And we were all at it, mate. The whole crowd was there. So all the Fright Festers were singing along. It was one mental party. And this is 3:30 in the morning, by the way, I've got to say, right? So we were going for it.
I was asleep by then.
You probably were. But we were going for it. And it was such a laugh, because it just basically just went on from crappy songs to fun songs to weird songs to everything in between. And then it was just alcohol everywhere. And it was such a laugh. So that helped the fact that Villainess would let me down. But it didn't help me to recover in time to try and sleep for the final day on Monday.
So what did you see on Monday then?
So
what was your first film?
So I was lucky. I had a later start because I saw the Discovery film. So I didn't see the main film. I saw Veronica. Veronica was bloody amazing.
Was it?
Bloody good, mate. So it's very Hitchcock style film, right? Veronica was basically this. It's based around a reclusive female psychologist who's sort of tucked away in a cabin somewhere, hiding away. Doesn't really do medicine anymore, but she's taken on the case of a disturbed person called Veronica, and it's their journey. It's very Hitchcock. It's shot in black and white. It's very Hitchcock. Very very Brian De Palma kind of, you know, sort of style film, whereby you look at it and you see the slow build up of the film, and you discover lots about the characters. Very character driven, very very dialogue driven.
Is that a nice way of saying there's not a lot of deaths in it?
Yeah, okay. But you don't notice that at all. You don't need deaths. Spanish films are subtitled, and you know it's great. I love this film. I love that I saw this film. I love that fact that I put some money. I put some faith into watching and get a ticket for it. It's just this patient doctor relationship thingy that unravels, and you follow it and you sort of see what's going on. And the acting's phenomenal and the scenes are phenomenal. And you just watch it, mate. Find it somehow, watch it, and thank me later that you saw it. It's really, really good. Really good.
I saw Stillborn. I remember you went taken with it, because another film about like Involving the mother and the baby, la la la. I've seen all that.
It would have been the fifth film I would have seen with some sort of dead kid involved.
So yeah, but it was actually pretty good. It was pretty good. So this child is born, and it just so happens that he was one of the twin, and the twin dies. But it's not necessarily about that. It's that this with the couple have moved to this new place. And they just try and get on with their life. Though the wife sort of struggles a little bit with, sort of postnatal types of issues and things. At the same time, convinced that there is something, some sort of horrific, demonic entity trying to take her child. And it was spun out quite nicely, actually. And I quite enjoyed it in the end. The thing I liked about it also was it was a film that didn't necessarily end nicely.
Okay.
It didn't have a nice, happy ending. It was pretty good. It was, thumbs up. I mean, I'm not going to rush out and watch it again, but it was quite good, actually. It was a good start to the day.
Right.
I think we still are separated at this point. Is that right?
Did we?
What did you see? Where were you?
I saw Low Life after Veronica.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take it all back.
What did you see?
Low Life.
Yeah, you were there. That's right.
My film of Fright Fest.
Yes.
Low Life was magnificent.
Very much so. Yes, it really was. It blew me away. I heard nothing
about it. I didn't know.
Yeah, I read
what
the premise. I read the premise. I thought it was good, and then the film. I was like, "Whoa!" So, Low Life is basically this. How should I put it? It's a take on society.
I got great storytelling that layers the movie with characters and motive.
Yeah, that's good. Mine was a grisly take on society and the depths we get to, and I think that both of us sort of covers it quite well, because I first of all it was very very Tarantino-y to me.
It's done in a pulp fiction type style, but a bit more clinical than pulp fiction.
But also the gunfights, the brutality, you know, it's very much, you know, you don't, there's no build up to some of the violence is just bang there in your face.
It starts off. You know, the baddie. He's a proper baddie. He's like, my god!
It
was grotesque. I was like, wow. But the interesting way, the way the film plays out, is there's scenes where it looks like it's one way, and then the next scene, which is back in time, that precedes it, you suddenly realise these new characters that you thought were one way, their motivation is different, and they're doing something else completely different.
Yeah, because the way it's shot.
Yeah, and the excitement of knowing that they're building up to this scene that's set out a certain way, and you're all of a sudden you're like, oh my god, it's going to head, come to a head.
And the way it's shot
so
is great.
So powerful.
Because the way it's shot is really good, because what it's done is it's set in that sort of backwards order. So you see one scene, and then you see it a few minutes earlier, which makes it, and it gives that scene completely different relevance, and it goes from there to the crescendo at the end, and it's weird because it's a film about organ harvesting. You think, what the hell? And it just goes from this organ harvesting thingy to it just spirals out of control, and it's this, and the best bit is this Mexican wrestler guy. That's it, El Monstro. What's the tagline? It's the legend is all, right?
Yeah. I can't remember how they phrase it in Spanish, but it's kind of like La leyenda es todo.
Yeah. And it's great because this is plonked Mexican wrestler guy, you know, this guy who's got his mask, and it's all about a mask and about his character.
I'm getting that costume for
you have to, man. But a great film, I loved it, and I loved how brutal it was. It was just in your face. It was no messing about. There was no subtlety to the film. It was just bang. It's life's raw. This thing is harsh. If you're struggling at lower end of the food chain,
Low Life.
Yes, fuck. Yeah, it's fucked. Everything was crazy. Go watch it, man. Just find it, watch it, and enjoy it. It was really, really good.
Because that film was so great, I think I saw a turkey after that.
What did you see?
I think I saw Top top-knot detective.
Did he? Yeah. It looked good. It looked good.
I can't. Did I definitely see that? I haven't got it in front of me here.
I saw Better Watch Out.
Yeah, I know. I missed that.
Better Watch Out was brilliant, mate.
I'm going to catch that because apparently that's coming to Shudder.
It is. You're going to love it. It's Home Alone meets Home Invasion-ish type of film. It's a bit seedy, man, this film. It's a bit weird and creepy as well. It's funny. Some good dialogue in terms of these kids. I don't want to give it away, man, because it's a great twist in it.
Okay, well, I'll give some stuff about mine then. I read the synopsis to Top Knot Detective.
Yeah.
It was the greatest 90s samurai show you've never seen, apparently.
Yeah.
And it's a documentary about this obscure 90s samurai show and yes. Also some of some dark story that is around it with the people who made it and that. And I thought, okay, great. Sat there, watched it, and it was, you know, funny enough, it looked like Power Rangers on acid type thing. And it was all funny. It was like pretty 90s. And then there was a certain point where it suddenly dawned on me that this isn't a real documentary. It's like a mockumentary. And that at that point, it was just kind of deflated for me. And then all the 90s stuff started to look a little over-egged. I didn't really enjoy it. And I might have fallen asleep in the middle.
So Better Watch Out, basically, it's set on a suburban street, and there's this kid who's got a favorite babysitter, and she's going to babysit him that night. The parents are going out. Patrick Warburton, you know he's the voice of American Dad. Yeah, Patrick Warburton, you know, he's those sort of voices. He's a dad in it, and he plays his family. They go away.
American Dad is literally the dad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And he's so they go away for the night. Babysitter's there. Babysitter is the favorite of the one of the lads, and they're going about their evening, and then they get a brick through the window saying something along the lines of "get out or die" or something like that. And then there's someone sneaking around the house, and then suddenly it takes a turn for the worst, and it's a home invasion film, but with a twist.
Is it comedy or is it?
It's very funny, very dark, very
another
twisted.
Another comedy horror.
Yeah, and it's great fun. You'll like it. I know you'll like it. It's worth a watch, mate. Yeah, and it's got some great twists on it. It really has. But yeah, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed watching that. It went down well in a treat. The crowd loved it. I think everyone walked out thinking, "Yeah, what a great film!" And it's out at Christmas time this year.
Alrighty.
After that, what did you watch?
No, we came back together. We came back together for this one.
No, we didn't.
Oh, you didn't watch A Terror of Hallows Eve?
No. I watched Meatball Machine Kodoku, the best film ever you're going to see
in
your
life.
It was fantastic. Go on. How bad was Terror of Hallows Eve?
It was...
That's it all.
It wasn't great. It was okay. The big problem I had was... Well, I should have known. The poster itself sort of shows this small troll-like person. Basically, it looked like Dobby the House Elf. That's not very scary, right? I'm going to get this because this leads on to another thing I thought about it, which was he is called the Trickster.
Okay.
Yeah, this evil entity is called the Trickster. Now,
right.
Any of our listeners who are fans of the Sarah Jane mysteries will know there's a baddie in that called the Trickster who looks a lot more scary than this thing. And it's sort of teenage. Yeah, people die in it.
You're not selling it, mate. You're not selling it.
Yeah, people die in it.
Where's the horror festival?
Yeah.
You're not selling it, mate.
No, I didn't think much of it.
All right, let me sell you Meatball Machine Kodoku. It was... bloody really? Fantastic. Okay. Mate, have you seen Tokyo Gore Police?
No, I haven't.
Right. So there's this strain of films which are very Japanese, very out there, lots of blood and gore, and it's like Splatterfest, and it's the most fucked up thing you can think of that they've put onto a movie in terms of I don't know what, man, fuck it, I don't know, I begin to start this film, and you'd see these mutations of people, and someone's sitting there thinking about mutation. So the mutation, basically, what happens is the film is there's this virus floating around, and it takes over a part of where they stay, and the thing you're most obsessed about becomes your weapon, right? So it could be anything. It could be in the film, there's a guy obsessed about money, obsessed about, I don't know, I can't remember now off the top of my head, obsessed about books, obsessed about everything. So that becomes your weapon. Yeah. And it's just one splatterfest after another. And some of the dialogue is hilarious. It's translated, obviously, in, so you may lose some in translation, but I swear I've never laughed so much at a film at Fright Fest than I've ever done at that film. I was laughing every few minutes.
More than Deathgasm.
More than Deathgasm, trust me. I was cracking up. I walked out thinking, what the hell have I seen? I want to watch it again. It's brilliant. It was just a splatterfest of all kinds of blood and guts and corny lines, and you're cracking up with stuff, and you're thinking, this can't get any worse. Oh, shit, it got worse than it had done. And worse in a good way. Or you're thinking, this can't go any more twisted. Oh, shit, it's gone twisted. It just changes gear every few minutes.
I reckon I'll watch it. I'll be like, I know what. You watched it with a crowd who were up for watching it, and it was, like, great to watch it with them. But I'm going to be watching it by myself, thinking, this is just not working.
Probably, but then that's the thing with Fright Fest, right? You're watching with the right sort of crowd as well. But
there's films that are standalone, like Low Life. I'm going to be buying that.
I mean, tell you what, I'll come round your house and watch Meatball Machine Kanoga with you and laugh with you. There you go. There's two now. All right, last film of the day. Last film of the festival, even.
Yes.
Go on.
And it definitely brought the house down. It was The Tragedy Girls.
It was. I marked it as one of the ones I have to watch.
Yeah, it was definitely my top five. It's up there. Only second to Low Life, because Low Life just had that emotional hook for me. But Tragedy Girls, what is it? Like an updated Clueless, Heathers.
Yep.
Meets
Scream.
Yeah. It was these two girls at high school who they're obsessed with their social media presence.
Yes.
And they're into slashers.
Yes.
Literally. How would you put it?
So for me, it's very much a film made for the current sort of generation. So it's very much about social media. It's about likes and hashtags and that sort. So all the tick box lines are in there. And it's very much driven about these girls that have got this thing about notoriety. They've got a blog called The Tragedy Girls, and there's a serial killer on the loose, and they want to hype it up, and they want to do what they can to get their blog most noted out there. So yeah, these two girls, they're in high school, they're high school seniors, and then they're obsessed with this social media presence, and they want to do what they can to get it. And their interest is driven by these serial killer, these murders, and they want to get involved in it. And it's very hands on from them. So they're very much into getting involved in these murders. And then what they do is I won't give some of it away, I suppose. They get this serial killer and they trap him. And it gets quite funny because they sort of almost use him to try and learn how to become better at being serial killers. And then along with this, some killings start increasing in this town, and their blog gets more likes and more notoriety.
Yeah.
And they get all these hits, and then suddenly it goes out of control, and they just try and do what they can to keep this blog going and keep this notoriety going. And it obviously concludes at a prom. It obviously concludes with a lot of nods to a lot of films like Clueless and Heathers. And there's a prom scene at the end, and then there's these two girls, and then there's a big crescendo. I liked the film. It wasn't the best film of the festival for me, but I liked watching it. I liked some of the way it was put together.
It was a big hitter, this film.
Yeah, it was. I think it's going to play really well. I think it's going to get to the mainstream sort of audience. They'll like it. It'll play well at cinema. I think it'll be a great one to chuck onto the DVD and get that going, and then people will just love it. It's a great film, man. I like watching it. I think it worked really well. I think for me personally, some of the lines were a bit corny, and like, you know, they kept using the word jelly instead of jealous. I'm like, oh, fuck's sake, man, come on. And those are
just a case of them being young and we're old, Mal.
Yeah, probably. It probably is, mate. But, you know, are you jelly? I'm like, oh, come on, man. I don't want to hear that, you know. But then the Tyler McIntyre, the guy behind it, made this film Patchwork. And Patchwork was fantastic.
Yes, I was going to say that, Mal. Wait, oh, my God. You beat me to it. I tried to find out what this director had done, right?
Yes.
And I find this title, Patchwork. So I punch it into Google.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the exact term, but your name came up. It was
I wrote a review for it.
That was the first hit. Was it a piece you'd written on it? For Christ, I'm not reading that.
It was no. I've done it justice, mate. No, I wrote a review for it for London Horror Society.
You never mentioned it though.
Didn't I? I'm sure I did.
No, you never mentioned it. Certainly in the run up to this. No, you've never mentioned it to me. This is the first time.
No, I'm sure I mentioned it in the podcast at some point. I don't know. Anyway,
Patchwork gets to show you I didn't listen to the podcast.
Or me. The Patchwork was a great film. And so I bought into watching his second film, Tyler McIntyre's second film, Tragedy Girls. And it worked really well. Again, someone had dialogue. You're right, probably because I'm old. And I'm like, you know, jelly. And those sort of words are like, oh, what the hell. But I think apart from that, some of the scenes were really, really funny. There's a current trailer going around. Don't watch it. If you haven't seen the movie,
I sat through that. Gives everything away. No.
I know. So the current trailer, don't watch it. It gives everything away and it ruins one of the best scenes in the film, actually, which I won't say about it. But there's a scene in there, and I'm like, oh shit, it's in the trailer. So the trailer gives a lot away, but watch it. We liked it, and I think it's a great way to close Frightfest. But yeah, I mean, that was Frightfest for us guys. You know, that was
2017.
Yeah, us whizzing through 25, 30 films across two podcasts, across 5 days, involving all sorts of movies and, you know, going out, getting drunk or having drinks.
What was your film in Frightfest then?
I don't really know, man, because I didn't really have a film with Frightfest. You know, I had lots of other films to light.
Low life movie for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they were very close, but that one just made me laugh, wince and cry. And that's my holy trinity of horror
laugh,
films.
Laugh, wince, and cry.
Yeah.
That's a good one, mate.
Yeah, it hit all the high points for me.
I like that, mate. I like
grotesque,
that.
For me, funny, and upsetting.
I think for me, I haven't got a top film that really stood out to say, I've got to watch this. I think for me, Low Life was good. 68 Kill was good. Tragedy Girl was good, but I like Mayhem. I like Killing Ground. I like Veronica. Really, really good. I like Freehold. Was really good as well.
Yep.
You know, Better Watch Out. I like that. I like watching that. To be fair, Rumi wasn't too bad, but I think I'll go with you on the top film was probably Low Life, 68 Kill, and Tragedy Girls, and Killing Ground because it's brutal in what it does. And I like Mayhem because. You know me, mate, I change jobs quite a lot and I've worked with some random people that I wouldn't mind being let loose on for a little while. So I like Mayhem as well. But I think all in all it was a great fight for us. I think it was a strong lineup. I think there was a lot of films where normally you can duck out of mainstream films and think I'll be all right on this Discovery. But here I think the mainstream was pretty strong this year. Yeah.
All right, we're done then. Let's go.
Yes, I think we're done. We've done more than hours.
You're waffling now, mate. You're waffling.
Right, so we're going to call it a night, or call it a day, or whatever it is, on this part, well, second part of, or fourth podcast. Again, tweet us at AI Horror Pod. I'm at Mal Jutley, and you're at Reyes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, let us know what you think. This is a bit of a longer podcast, but we had to cover a lot more into it. Let us know what you think. And that was Frightfest, guys. So, hope you enjoy it. I hope some films stand out to you. If you watch anything that we recommended or anything that we didn't like and you liked it, let us know. And we can discuss it on Twitter. And that's it for us, guys. Rizzo, anything else to say?
No, I'm done. Yeah.
Right, good stuff. Have a good one, everyone. See you for the next podcast.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.